The thing I'm having is I just bought a stupid wireless mouse.
Can I do that with Wi-Fi?
Now my screensaver doesn't work.
And that's the solution I'm looking for.
Yep, that would be it.
Something that they call drive-by download.
Okay, stop there.
Try to boot into something called safe mode. Take my advice and go get this free program that is out of this world.
Eliminate those and see if the problem still persists.
Oh, that's a great idea. Okay, I didn't think about that.
Does your computer bite?
There's nothing that comes in the computer that's of any value.
Has your hard drive gone floppy?
The head whack is the thing that makes you kind of go, no!
It's time to call the Computer Corner.
We're not your daddy's computer radio show.
Is this thing on?
On News Talk 92.3, KTAR.
And this thing is on. Or at least, we think it's on.
It sure is.
We'll know if it's on, whether or not people choose to participate in the show. We are the Data Doctors, back in studio for another weekend edition of the Computer Corner. Not that we have a weekday edition. I don't know why I threw that in there. We're here each and every Saturday, have been for more than a decade, and with your support, we'll be here for at least another. If you've not listened to the show, or not listened in a long time, you may or may not know that we come each and every week with a theme. We talk about technology, we talk about computers, we talk about things technological in your life that maybe frustrate you, or things that bring you joy. Either way, we talk about those things. We invite you to talk with us. And to give us a call, 602-277-5827 is the number. It's 277-KTAR. That's how you can dial on in. Or, if dialing scares you, if you're not in a place where you can dial, whatever the case might be, we've got a whole website set up for you, datadoctors.com/radio, or datadoctors.com. You can click on the radio show button if that makes your life easier. You'll see our theme, which today's theme, Business Technology Survival Guide. We're talking about some of the things businesses do or should do to make their businesses run smoother. And even if you're saying, well, I'm retired, how does this apply to me? You know, the computers today that we have in our homes, and many people's homes have multiple computers, they sure do look an awful lot like business networks did and computer systems did just a few years ago. So even if you think what we're going to talk about doesn't apply to you, I'm going to suggest that lots of the things cross over. And certainly, if it doesn't apply today, a time will come, and probably sooner rather than later, where the things that businesses are doing, those things all seem to trickle down to consumer-level sort of practices. So I would argue that today's show definitely is about you, even if you're not involved in a business. Obviously, if you are, then the things we're going to talk about today are how to prevent some of the costs of downtime. And the cost of downtime really is simply in a business where you're looking at the fact that a business is in business to make money. And generally speaking, there are employees and there are people and processes and other things in place that help generate that money. And when you have technology, which most businesses these days, they're using the computer for getting on the internet and doing some of their business, maybe keeping doing books on their computer or online, email, those kinds of things. Every time your computers have problems, it's preventing people from doing work, which is preventing you from making money. And obviously, I'm guessing you're not in business to spend money just to have people work. So the idea of computer downtime and doing things to avoid it is something that businesses, generally speaking, once they've been on board a little bit with technology, start to figure out that this is an important thing to do. Figuring out where they can make changes, either in behaviors or in systems or putting things in place that prevent downtime, actually moves the sort of cost of doing computer service repair maintenance away from an expense and towards almost an asset kind of look, where it's something you're doing to keep your people productive rather than something you're paying for and having the loss of productivity when something happens. So we're going to talk about some of the things you can do from a preventative nature. Of course, we invite you to call in and talk about whatever your issues might be. Some people asking, is it time yet to go to Service Pack 3? It's been out a while now. What about Windows Vista? You know, it's been more than a year now. Maybe these things are things that you're interested in. You're thinking about buying a new computer. Back to school is only a few months away. Maybe school just let out. So you'll start seeing deals coming your way. It seems like each year, earlier last year, we started to see all the back to school stuff really start to hit in July. And here we are in June, so it's not far. It might be time to start researching if you're going to be in a position where a new system makes sense. We can talk about ways you can use the internet to hunt down better gas prices, or ways you can research better ways to squeeze more out of what you got. So all kinds of topics. It's all open to what you want to discuss. We'll interweave the business technology survival with your calls, your questions, your comments. Again, 602-277-5827. It's 277-KTAR. Of course, you can join us online, datadoctors.com/radio, and you'll find links there to ask questions, make suggestions, participate in a blog, all kinds of good stuff, and of course, links to all kinds of resources to help with some of the things you can do to prevent problems or make sure that you thwart them. You like that word? When they arise. So you're hearing a second voice in studio. It's Mario.
Right here.
Who's come to help make sure that the radio show is quality. Is it over? What's that?
Am I on? I'm not hearing anything coming back.
Well, I hear you.
Okay.
That's I'm guessing they hear you. So one way or another, you just don't hear yourself, but that's okay. Do you talk to yourself sometimes?
Occasionally. It's
out loud?
You know, when you have a two-way conversation going, it's when it's a real problem.
No, I don't think it's a problem. It's only a problem when you admit it. So Mario has been involved, and part of the reason I asked him to come in today and sit on this side of the world, because a lot of times he comes in and helps out answering calls and sort of juggling some of the aspects behind the scenes of making the show go. But Mario is in our company. Is responsible for communicating a lot with business customers and has been for a long time. And so the kinds of things that I'm sure that people are calling in with, we have two different sort of kinds of customers, right? We have people that call in that their hair is on fire. I need somebody right now to come out because my business can't function. And they may just call us every once in a while when there's a problem. And then we have customers that have us out on more of a regular basis to take care of issues as they sort of crop up and to prevent issues. We'll talk about during the show here some of the things that people are calling about on a regular basis, and there's sort of obvious fixes that can be put in place that aren't just one-time fixes, but things that are going to take care of making those problems not come back. And it's a lot of the stuff is simple. Some stuff it's things you can do yourself. It's behaviors you can change, and so I think Mario can help there just to understand what are the things that are sort of recurring, and you can prevent a lot of problems by changing what you do.
You mean preventative maintenance, like oil changes?
Like oil changes? We change oil on computers?
Oh, yeah.
Well, we do kind of the equivalent of changing oil, right?
Equivalent, exactly. You don't wait till it's broke before you decide to fix it.
Well, you can wait till it's broken.
Well, yeah, we like that, too.
No, they don't like that, though. So we're going to talk about ways you can not wait till it's broken. We've got resources posted for you again online, datadoctors.com/radio. We got lines open for you, 602-277-5827. And better than lines open and places for you to ask questions, we've got somebody to talk about traffic and weather and to give you expert advice on how to navigate the roadways. And that's Bruce Gary in the KTR Traffic Center. Bruce. Welcome back to the Computer Corner. We're here for you until 2 o'clock today, so lots of time. We got lines open for you, 602-277-5827. It's 277-KTAR. And we've got all kinds of resources posted for you on things you can do to prevent problems. And the resources, although they may look like, and we may be talking about sort of business tech survival, a lot of the same ideas apply to your home. For example, there's kind of three main things when it comes to preventative maintenance. Whether it's a business or a home, just what you do is a little bit different. So there's data protection, which means, for all intents and purposes, backing up. Now, in a business, usually you would pair that with some sort of redundancy from a data standpoint. And the backup methods, because you're generally backing up more data, become a little bit more sophisticated. But the same idea exists that backing up data prevents data loss. That's the most basic form of preventative maintenance you can do. So that's one of the kind of three main areas we generally try to focus on from a real basic preventative standpoint. The next is power protection. And especially here in Arizona, we have relatively stable power. We don't have big power outages and things, but you'd be surprised how much power fluctuates from just the regular utility company coming in. And so something to regulate those fluctuations and something to help bridge the gap for the couple of second sort of flickers of power that we sometimes have, especially in the summer, especially during the monsoon season. something also to help protect against lightning strikes and surges that might occur. And so the basic form of power protection would be a surge protector. And if you want to upscale that a touch, really not a huge difference in price cost, you add surge protection with what's called a battery backup or a UPS, an uninterruptible power supply. And so those are the kinds of things that are the basic two stepping stones. The third is really sort of a security measures. And we do this again in the home in the form of antivirus, anti-spyware, firewalls, those kinds of things. We just generally step that up a touch when it comes to a business. And we put a little bit more robust firewalls in place because, again, we have more users and the impact is greater. We might have a antivirus package that's managed, meaning instead of installing it on each individual machine and having to worry about each machine updating and all those things, you install it centrally and push it out to machines. But the same basic principles apply. Now, in a business, a lot of times, especially a larger business where some of you may work, they may have access restrictions on the internet, meaning during certain times of the day, you can only go to certain sites, or instant messenger programs don't work, but email does, or all kinds of different things. In the home, that same kind of idea relates to parental controls. It's really the same thing. You're either monitoring or restricting access to places. And so a lot of these same ideas, again, we talked about, although we're talking about business-related things, they may apply to you in your home because today's home computer system and home network resembles a ton what business and small business networks and computer systems look like 4, 5, 6, 7 years ago. So all these things just sort of apply. Should we see if we can jump onto the phones, help some people out, and see what's happening in the world? We'll find out if they can hear you, because you couldn't hear you.
Let's take a call.
We're going to talk to Mary, who gave us a call, 602-277-5827. Mary, welcome to the Computer Corner.
Yes. Are you ready?
We're ready for you.
All right. I'm considering, I need a new desktop computer for a small home office. I'm struggling with staying with XP versus Vista. All my children who have, you know, the latest and greatest laptops provided by their companies still have XP.
Yeah, so there's
my drivers are compatible, you know, the drivers work on Vista, but is it worth the hassle? Or what would you recommend?
Well, let's step back and first understand a few things. Number one, you said your kids who have the latest and greatest from their company all are still running Windows XP, and by and large, most businesses today still run Windows XP for a number of reasons. Businesses generally don't go out and run and get the latest, greatest thing because their application software and other things that they're using may or may not yet function. They may not have had time to test yet. There may be new hardware requirements. And so businesses generally don't run out and purchase the latest, greatest operating system. In fact, it's generally about a year and a half to 2 years before businesses really start to adopt the latest. So the fact that none of them have that may or may not impact you or a sort of consumer level kind of thing. The thing, when people come to us and ask this Vista versus XP question, or in the past, you know, Windows 98 versus Windows 95, or whatever the new latest greatest is, really, before we start talking about, well, let me just tell you what I think, we need to understand what it is that you do. And so, yeah, you said it was for a small home office?
Yes. I run office programs, some photography, photo. But that's basically it. I'm not necessarily going to hook a television up to my computer in the near future.
Okay, well, if you're sticking with Microsoft Office and basic applications and things, those things are going to be compatible on both sides. But you started talking about sort of a niche, which is photo manipulation. And we need to drill into that a little bit to find out what specifically you do there. We also, if you don't mind holding just for a few minutes through the news break here, I'm going to, when we come back to this side, I'm going to help you drill into what's really important to you and what matters.
Okay.
Is that okay, Mary?
That's good.
Put you there on hold. You just stand by. We've got lines open for you, 602-277-5827. When we come back, we're going to help Mary understand what the differences are and help her make that decision between Windows XP, Windows Vista. It's the Data Doctors. Stick around. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Computer Corner. We're here for another hour and a half for you. We've got lines open, 602-277-5827, and we've got resources posted for you online at datadoctors.com/radio. Before we went to the break, we were talking with Mary, who's looking at buying a new PC. She's out there in the world trying to make a decision, and it's a decision that a lot of people trying to buy right now are faced with, which is there's this new thing called Windows Vista, although it's not that new. It's been out for more than a year. And do I go with Windows Vista, or when I look around and talk to my friends and talk to other people I know, they all still seem to be running Windows XP. And so which one's right for me? Right, Mary?
That's the question.
So we talked about, just before we went to the break, that you're basically, for the most part, using Office applications. I'm assuming you get online and check email and those kinds of things, which those things alone don't help you really make the choice, because those things are going to work equally well in sort of both operating systems. So the next question then becomes, what other things, and you talked about you do some stuff with photography. What programs specifically do you use when you're dealing with your digital photography?
I use the freebies that came with the computer. There's the Microsoft Simplified one, Picture It, I believe it's called. Nothing too exotic, a little photo editing, but mostly sharing with family and friends.
So some of those things that you're used to change a little bit. For example, in Windows XP and in most operating systems before, at least since Windows 98 or so?
98.
Yeah, there's the program that came with the operating system for managing email was called Outlook Express.
Mm-hmm.
In Windows Vista, there's a new program called Windows Mail, and it looks and feels different and operates differently, and so some people have a hard time adjusting to the way it works. The same thing then exists for many of the applications. So while Solitaire may look the same, most people don't use Solitaire a whole lot. So some of the other applications and the whole operating system itself looks and feels differently. You're used to maybe, in some people are used to, when they click in Windows XP on Start, they can go to Run and they can type things.
Mm-hmm.
In Windows Vista, there is no Run command. There's just a search box, which acts like the Run command. You can just type in it, but it takes a while for people to kind of get used to that. So where I'm going with this is, these are just a few examples of some of the differences that exist, and things look and feel significantly different. Now, if you're one of those that doesn't mind adjusting to those changes, then it may be just a fine thing for you. I don't have any problem adjusting to those things, but then again, here I am helping people on the radio, so I may not be a good measure of that, right?
Would it be an issue that I'm networked to a laptop at home that my husband does travel with that runs XP, and he uses Outlook, which I use Outlook too, not Express.
Right. So
any problem with the two different
There's no
operating
reason.
Systems?
Yeah, there's no reason those can't work together. We set up those kinds of things all the time, and that's not a big problem. Now, I will say that I've seen, just out of the box, trying to set up Windows Vista with Windows XP kind of intermixed in one network, sometimes that's not quite as easy as we would like it. They work a little bit differently. They still have the same basic principles behind them, and so if someone who kind of just gets under the hood and knows how to set up a network comes in, there's no problems. But using the little wizards and things, it's not always as slick as you'd like. If all the machines are sort of from the same family, it makes life a little easier.
Well, part B of the question is I just realized a couple of weeks ago that Microsoft has already said in 2 years or a certain time frame, we're going to have yet another operating system.
Yes.
So is I'm curious, do you think Vista is going to end up like ME? And it'll just be a blip on the screen and to just hang in there with XP and go for the next one.
You know, trying to look at the future and listen to anything Microsoft or many of the other manufacturers out there will say about what they think the future is going to be, Microsoft and many others are very famous for delaying and changing course and doing things over and over and over again. So my personal opinion, there will probably be another major operating system release in the next probably 2 years, 2.5 years is my guess.
Mm-hmm.
Now, are you going to wait till then to change? You know,
Absolutely.
The other side of this is people go, well, you know, Microsoft said they're going to stop supporting Windows XP come, and then they put some date out there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just not too long ago, I think 30 days ago or so, they just released a new major service pack for Windows XP. That tells me that they're still actively working on it, because they realize that despite their best efforts, the world isn't mass migrating over to a new operating system, and so they've extended their sort of end date for support and those things a few times already, and I'm guessing they will again. And so it comes down to, really, do you want to go through that process of learning a new way of doing things? You've already done your homework, and you've made sure that the scanners and the printers and the cameras and the things that you have are going to work. And so it's really not an issue of, well, the choice has been made for me because of my circumstances. It comes down to a personal preference. One thing I will tell you is that if you seek out a company that can work with you a little bit, you can kind of have the best of both worlds. What I mean by that is Microsoft has something that the big OEM manufacturers don't really offer because it's not really convenient, but they offer something called downgrade rights. What that means is if you came into one of our shops, I could sell you a machine, and I can sell you a license for Windows Vista, but you can choose to opt into what's called downgrade rights, which means I can load Windows XP on the machine for you, and that's perfectly legal, even though you have a license for Windows Vista. And if at some point in the future you want to upgrade to Windows Vista, you already own that license. So there's no cost involved. There's just a little bit of time involved. Right?
Gotcha.
So that's something that I would say anybody who's looking to buy a machine today, if you're going to go the XP route, make sure you work with somebody that can help you with downgrade rights. If they don't know what you're talking about, you need to shop somewhere else. But downgrade rights is important because it takes the element of, I made the choice to go Windows XP. Now, 6 months from now, I want to go Windows Vista. I got to pay for another operating system. You've taken that part of the equation. You still may need to pay someone if you're not comfortable doing the upgrade for you, right, for their time. But you've eliminated that cost, and that can be more than $100 depending on which version of the operating system you're going to pick. And it can go up as high as like $200, $250 maybe.
Yeah.
So I would certainly want to look for that. If it was me, all things being equal, if my mom were to call me tomorrow and ask for advice on buying a new PC, and she's looking at these different things, I would say, Mom, go get a Windows XP machine. That's what I still use in my office. That's what I still have at my home office at home. My wife has Windows Vista, but she gets online and she does email. She doesn't care. I put it in because I wanted to live with it in my own home so I would learn more about it. At the end of the day, she doesn't really care. She doesn't even really know the difference, to be honest. She's probably listening now and mad at me. But
If I have 2 gig of RAM and still go with XP, am I covered for in the future?
I'm sorry, what was the question?
If I get 2 gig of RAM, isn't that what I'm running 256K now with XP, which is one reason I'm changing.
Yeah, I mean, memory is the best bang for the buck, and it's dirt cheap, comparatively speaking. I would load that thing up in every case, no matter what operating system I was going to run.
Gotcha.
So I would put, you know, if it was me, I'd put 2 or 3 gig in any machine I was going to run, because you would get more out of that. I would rather see people put more money into memory and less money into the processor and other things. That will be your biggest performance increase from a sort of speed standpoint.
Okay.
And you don't strike me as someone who needs a lot of storage capacity from a long-term storage, like hard drive space?
No, over 5 years, I've used maybe 60 gig, and that's with a ton of pictures on it. No, I storage all these hard drives with 500 are way too much more than I'd ever use.
Yeah, everything you buy today is going to have probably at least a 200 gigabyte or more. So, I mean, so you don't need to concern yourself with that, probably. I would, you know, so I mean, you've got, to me, you've just got to kind of go out and make that decision. I would tell you that all things being equal, what you buy then becomes not nearly as important as who you buy it from, because you need to make sure it's somebody that can work with you again on those downgrade rights so that you've paid for the new operating system but get the old if that's what you choose, number one. It's also, if you have a problem, you have someone to go back and see rather than sitting on hold tech support. You know, you've heard the nightmare. So
implicit in what you're saying is it's not necessarily wise to go to Gateway or Dell and order your system online because you can't get that. Go to a local person.
Yeah, I don't believe that the big box guys, the mail order guys, they offer those kinds of things with downgrade rights. That's just not something they're equipped to deal with. The other thing, and you've heard the stories, when you have a problem, if you bought it from one of those kind of guys, where's the Dell store?
Yeah.
So who do you go in and talk to? Well, you don't. You call up an 800 number. And, you know, they've come under fire a lot, and so have others, for not having U.S.-based support and it being hard to understand and tedious. And that process,
very frustrating to the consumer, very.
Right. So then who you buy it from, if the computer is, sort of taken out of the equation because you've figured out kind of what you want, it's all going to be about the same machine, right? Now it becomes, who am I going to have a relationship with when I have a problem? that to me should be what drives the purchase decision.
Gotcha.
All right.
Okay, well, you've given me quite a bit to think about, and I appreciate the time.
Not a problem, Mary. Hey, thanks for the call.
Okay.
You have a great weekend. See, we can help with things outside of business technology needs.
Out of business, of course.
And even if she had a business, it's the same advice. She actually said she had a home business, so it's the same idea.
It is.
You got to go down this path, and you got to figure out these things. And there's little things that people don't know that when you find out, it makes all the difference in the world. For example, I think Mary, a big light bulb went off for her with that whole downgrade rights thing. She can buy and pay for and legally acquire Windows Vista, but not have to run that, but have the option to run that down the road, and she already owns that piece of software. And those are the kinds of things that you're not going to get necessarily if you're going to go online to big box, iselljustboxes.com/special offer, right?
Definitely.
So, we got a couple lines open, 602-277-5827. Eric and Rod, I see you there. There's lines open for the rest of you. We're going to take a quick timeout here, get you caught up again with traffic and weather. Bruce Gary is standing by in the KTAR Traffic Center to help make sure we know what's happening on the roadways. Bruce? Google testing new Gmail features, things that you can try out too if you're a Gmail user. There's 13 new features in a new Labs tab in Gmail. My favorite, you can put yourself in timeout. They call it the Email Addict feature. If you find yourself addicted to email, button you can click, it'll lock you out of your Gmail account for 15 minutes purposely. So that you have to step away from the email. Lots of other cool little features. By the way, Gmail, it's just over 4 years old. Still, Google considers it a beta project because they're not quite yet satisfied that it's ready to come out of the beta status. So even though they keep releasing more features, and now they even have a Gmail pay model where if you have a business, you can take your entire enterprise and put it on Gmail, but with your own sort of your own domain. So, for example, we could take the Data Doctor's domain, stick the whole thing, and let Google host it, and they would guarantee uptime and reliability, and they give all the storage and these cool tools that plug in and make it seamless and all that kind of stuff. It's actually fairly reasonable considering all that you're getting, but it's funny to see that here's a product that's been around a long, long time, solid product, used by millions and millions of people. They're creating new features for it all the time. They're improving it all the time. They have a pay subscription model, and they still call it beta software.
Beta.
Maybe they have their sights set a little high on standards. Anyway, that's just one of the news items in this week's newsletter. If you'd like to subscribe to our newsletter, we have lots of convenient ways for you to do so, the easiest of which is to just surf over to datadoctors.com. You look for the place to put in your email address and hit the subscribe button. There's also links there to change your address, unsubscribe, and see a preview. Actually, not a preview. You can see the last, I believe it's 20 newsletters that we've sent. They're archived there for you in the newsletter archive. So check that out right on the front page, datadoctors.com. And in the newsletter, you'll find all kinds of cool news items, security tips. We warned you about XP Service Pack 3 and some of the problems that were going to occur a few weeks before it came out. We gave you steps on how you could avoid getting it until you so chose to have it. People who got our newsletter, who followed our advice, didn't fall victim like some people who didn't did. Gosh, that's confusing. And so anyway, there's all kinds of good free information in there. And we're very careful to make sure that we and only we have your email address. And we don't let third parties mingle with that and play with that. And we don't spam you. We only give you good stuff. So you can check that out, datadoctors.com. And while you're there, click on the radio show section and see all the things we're talking about this week when it comes to business technology and survival, which we're going to get back to in just a minute here. But we've got a few people that have been holding for a bit we want to jump on with. Rod in Phoenix. Rod, welcome to the Computer Corner.
Thank you, sir. I've got a slight problem. A while back, I had a Trojan horse show up on my computer. And a friend of mine took my computer, and he took everything out of it, put it all back in, cleaned it up, put it all back in. But my graphics card won't work now. Is there anything I can do to maybe download, update my graphics card or anything like that?
Well, maybe. You say your graphics card won't work. You got to give us some specifics of what is or isn't happening.
Okay. Well, for instance, my granddaughter came over. She was going to play the Disney Toontown. And it says, unable to open graphics card. Make sure you have the latest drivers installed from your 3D graphics card vendor.
Okay, so the first thing you'd want to do, so you're getting video displayed, it's just not able to use some of the sort of advanced features?
Right.
Okay, so you need to identify what kind of graphics card you have. Do you already know what that is?
Nope. Okay, I've got a Toshiba satellite laptop is what I've got.
Okay, and there's nothing from an aftermarket standpoint that's been added on in the graphics capacity. It'd be pretty rare in a laptop.
No.
Okay.
Nothing has been added on that.
So, what you need to do is you need to open up a web browser and find your way over to Toshiba's website, Toshiba.com. You'll need to do a little bit of navigating and find their consumer electronics and then their PC or computer section. And you're looking specifically for a support area where you can download drivers and updates.
And so you're and that's at Toshiba.com?
Yeah, so once you're there, they ought to, at some point when you drill down far enough, you're going to get into an area where you can look by model, and you'll need to know the model number, name, whatever it is, of your Toshiba.
Okay.
And you ought to be able to then display all the available drivers. You're going to want to look in for video or graphics drivers, and you'll have to read carefully, follow the instructions. You're going to basically download a little piece of software that's called a driver that's going to allow you to let Windows know how to communicate properly with that video card.
Okay.
Okay. But that's the steps that have to happen there. If I'm sensing you kind of want to continue things. We can do that off the air. I got to go to a break here. If you don't mind, I'm going to put you back on hold there, Rod, where I found you. I've got Eric, who is next up when we come back from the break here. We're talking about business technology, things you can do to prevent problems in your business or in your home. You can find resources online, datadoctors.com/radio. And, of course, we got lines open for you, 602-277-5827. We're the Data Doctors. We're here till 2 o'clock, so stick around. We'll be back right after the news break.
The thing I'm having is I just bought a stupid wireless mouse.
Can I do that with Wi-Fi?
Now my screensaver doesn't work.
And that's the solution I'm looking for.
Yep, that would be it.
Something that they call drive-by download.
Okay, stop there.
Try to boot into something called safe mode. Take my advice and go get this free program that is out of this world.
Eliminate those and see if the problem still persists.
Oh, that's a great idea. Okay, I didn't think about that.
Does your computer bite?
There's nothing that comes in the computer that's of any value.
Has your hard drive gone floppy?
The head whack is the thing that makes you kind of go, no!
It's time to call the Computer Corner.
We're not your daddy's computer radio show.
Is this thing on?
On News Talk 92.3 KTAR.
Welcome back to hour number two of the Computer Corner. We've got a full hour left to talk to you about your technology troubles, your computer consternation, and whatever's ailing you with your digital devices. You can give us a dial on up here at 602-277-5827. It's 277-KTAR. Makes the digits convert to numbers or vice versa. You can also join us online at datadoctors.com/radio. We've got resources posted for you. We're talking about ways to prevent problems before they happen with your technology. A little more specifically, we're talking about how to do it in a business, but most all of the things we're talking about there can apply to you, whether or not you are running a business computer system or business network or a home computer system or network. So take those things into account. In almost every case, preventing problems, much less hassle, much less cost than waiting for the problems to just simply occur. Hey, Mario, so Mario is one of the guys that if you're calling in and you're a business customer or you have business problems and you're talking to one of the guys at Data Doctors, Mario may be one of the guys you're talking to. What are the kinds of things that people often are calling in about and have troubles with that, whether it's business or not, that you're almost smiling when you're talking to them because the problems that they're talking about could have been prevented and generally prevented for less money than what they're going to now call you to come out and take care of?
Yeah, typically, Brandon, some of the things that we see is going back to the same one we're talking earlier about the oil change. Most customers, as long as it's functioning, they don't really do any kind of cleanups or removals and, you know, keep the system optimized.
And I think it must be just an education thing, because people, by and large, with their cars, they get their cars washed, right? And there may not be a whole lot of maintenance involved there. It may just be appearance, but they certainly get their oil changed. They get the tires rotated. They, you know, they take care of their cars. There is a maintenance schedule, if you will, that comes with a vehicle. Maybe that's the problem with our industry, is there's no sort of, when you buy a computer, there's no thick owner's manual that nobody reads and puts in the glove compartment, right?
Exactly.
That tells you, here's the maintenance that needs to be done, and or you're bombarded with sort of purported tools that will do some maintenance for you magically in the absence of people that are just these magic tools that slice, dice, and take out the trash. And you buy these things, and you get jaded because they don't actually do the job, of course. And so you think, well, maybe maintenance isn't necessary, or maintenance is just a bunch of hooey anyway. I'll wait till it breaks down and then take care of it. So the kinds of things that then you see, a big one I know, anytime somebody calls and they have data loss, and whether the data was super important or not, if it was, obviously they'll do anything to get that data back. Every single one of those data loss situations preventable.
It is.
Even people who say, well, but the place burned down. Well, yeah, but off-site storage of a backup is not an unreasonable thing to do these days. There's choices of portable media, portable hard drives, tapes. You can get zip cartridges. You can back up your most important stuff on floppies and CDs, on DVDs. Of course, there's all kinds of online backup methodologies out there. There's just tons and tons of choices that let you take a snapshot of what's good and get it away from your primary place that you're working, whether it's home, business, whatever the case might be.
A question on that for you, Brandon, with the backup. There, a lot of people will do a backup, but what about the recovery solution?
Well, people do backups, and a lot of people, when you ask them, well, do you back up? Usually you're started with, which means no, but then they go into, well, I do occasionally, and then when you drill down to, well, how often? Well, I should be doing it more. I mean, almost everybody, they know they should be. They realize what's going to happen, but for whatever reason, it's just not a big priority. And so what we see a lot is people who are maybe backing up very, very occasionally, but certainly not often enough. And when they are, they're not doing it because it's just not convenient. It's not easy. It's not automatic. It's not sort of set it and forget it and just it takes care of itself. It's a struggle. And so then they get real creative with how they back up because it's not convenient, to try to make it convenient. And at the end of the day, there's no super quick, fast, super convenient way to magically make all your stuff get protected. It takes a little bit of time and effort, and the time and effort generally is pretty well spent, and you can take those things and sort of schedule them to be at off-hours times. So I think that's probably why that happens a lot. And there's things you can do. There's all kinds of free products out there. There's products that are very low cost. There's things that you may already have built into your machine. Whatever it is, you need to get a routine down for taking care of sort of the data protection, which is that first layer of things you can do to prevent problems, because it's only a matter of time. It's going to happen to you that you're going to lose something that's valuable to you, and now you're willing to do whatever to get it back. You don't want to be in that position. It's no fun. And there may be nothing that anybody can do to ever get it back for you. So long before you put yourself in that position, start thinking about things you can do now. We've got resources posted for you. Datadoctors.com/radio. You can check those things out. Let's see if we can jump back on the phones here. And up next, I believe it was Eric, who's been holding for quite a bit. Eric, thanks for your patience. Welcome to the Computer Corner.
Oh, yeah. Hey, thanks for taking my call. I appreciate it. I've been listening to you guys just about every weekend.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
What can we help with?
Well, listen, I've got a Dell Dimension 4600. It's got 512 megabytes of double data rate RAM. I got 160 gigabytes of memory and all that kind of thing. It's, you know, my problem is that I've got a digital camera. I got a digital camera I bought for my wife. It's a Vivitar 6385U. And I have been trying to retrieve the pictures from this camera for a while now. And I've just been having the devil of a time trying to do it. Now, she bought an HP PhotoSmart camera, which we hooked up to the computer. Came up right away. We were able to retrieve the pictures from it right away. My problem with this Vivitar is that when I plug it up in the beginning, it gave me a little pop-up that said it was unrecognized or USB device unrecognized. I toyed around with it for a while there, and finally in the taskbar there, where it says safely remove hardware, I could finally see it there, and it's got the generic volume drive for the little RAM card.
Hey, Eric, I can make this a lot easier. I can save you a bunch of time and a bunch of trouble and a bunch of frustration. So every different camera manufacturer out there on the planet has their camera, and it comes with this little special cord, and it plugs into your computer, and it supposedly makes transferring pictures really easy, except for it doesn't always go real well. And we see about probably 30, 40% of the time people having struggles that you're having right now, and there's something you can get that will take care of this problem with this camera and every other problem with other cameras like it that you're going to have in the future, and it costs about $20.
Okay.
So there's something called a card reader. And they make these things that can be now put into computers, so they're just sort of installed internally, and there's little slots in the front where you can stick different media cards.
All right.
Or you can buy them as little add-on devices, and generally in the form of a little box that plugs into a USB port on your computer. They don't need any power. They plug right into a single USB port. They're recognized by Windows. And what happens with this thing is it'll have anywhere from half dozen to a dozen different little slots on the front, each slot for a different type of memory card. So they'll work with compact flash, with SD memory, with XD, with every different flavor of sort of memory that goes into digital cameras these days.
I have thought about purchasing one of those, so I guess I'll actually end up having to do that. What I've been doing in the interim is just pulling the memory card from the Vivitar and pop it into the HP, and that way I was able to get my pictures from that card.
I'd avoid doing that. Sometimes we've seen people lose pictures and information that way, because sometimes when the card, when a camera sees it, it'll every once in a while see it and think it needs to format it and start over, and that's not a good thing. So a card reader is going to save you a bunch of frustration, and it's going to make your life in the future easier too. I would definitely go that route. A few bucks, and it makes life easy, and it gives you a lot of flexibility. So
okay, well, that sounds like that's the way I need to go then.
All right.
I do appreciate your help, and like I say, I listen to you guys every weekend, and I appreciate your show.
Hey, we appreciate you listening. Thanks, and have a good weekend.
Thanks, you too.
Bye-bye. That sound we hear in our ears, that you hear in your speakers or in your headphones or whatever you're listening to, that means it's time for Bruce Gary again in the KTR Traffic Center to get us caught up. Bruce. Welcome back to the Computer Corner. If you're looking for resources to help protect your PC, do a little bit of preventative sort of maintenance, take care of problems before they occur, we've got all kinds of resources posted for you online, datadoctors.com/radio, or you can click on the radio show section. Coming up in just a bit, Mario's going to help us out with a couple of our sort of weekly things that we do, our Geek Speak of the Week, our Head Whack of the Week, so stay tuned for those just after the news break coming up here in a few minutes. Our newsletter contains all kinds of interesting information, news, stuff about technology. One of the things that's in this week's newsletter, is it time for Service Pack 3 yet? So about a month ago, Microsoft unveiled the latest Service Pack, and if you recall, a Service Pack is just a compilation of all the fixes and sort of bug issues and things that have been discovered to that date. So for anybody who keeps their machine regularly updated, they would have most everything that would be included in the Service Pack already. But there were all kinds of issues when the Service Pack was first released, people having lockup problems, other issues. Our advice just before the Service Pack came out was to disable your automatic updates, or at least disable the automatic application of updates, let them download, but then you could pick and choose what installed and when. And many of you heeded our advice, but now people are asking, is it time now? So if you subscribe to our newsletter, you would have gotten the information about that. If you don't, I'll give you the quick steps on how you can read up about sort of our advice, our latest advice on the Windows XP Service Pack 3. If you go to our website, datadoctors.com, click under the Free Help Center, and then under weekly advice columns, you'll see the top, newest, most recent advice column deals with that subject. And we've got all kinds of information, including links to Microsoft Knowledge Base articles where they talk about known issues and problems and some of the things that may apply to your specific situation. A couple of sort of the big highlights. You got to make sure you have plenty of disk space before you start out down that process. Microsoft is recommending a minimum of 1.5 gigabytes. And you say, 1.5 gigabytes for a service pack? That's a lot. And it is a lot. I think these days, with hard drive sizes the way they are, I don't know that it's unreasonable, but it is a lot. Something to definitely check out before you go down that path. Obviously, you want to make sure you've got a good backup of everything important to you. Make sure that, you know, all the types of things that you're working with specifically, you've got your installation discs handy for them. So your office products and your Quicken, your QuickBooks, whatever the case is, make sure you got those things in case something goes wrong. You at least have a path to go down. Make sure you disable your antivirus and anti-spyware programs just before you go to install. There's been some reports on those particular kinds of things getting in the way of the installation. You want to make sure you're logged in as an administrator or the administrator. If you don't know how to do that, you want to do a little research at Google before you do that. And by all means, if you have not taken our advice on getting good power protection before, this is a good time to think about putting a battery backup in place, because if something goes wrong during the update process for any major update like this, a power gets shut off, turned off, whatever the case is, it really spells disaster. So it's not a bad idea if you haven't already made the purchase. Now is a good time. Make sure if you're using something called fast user switching in Windows XP, you want to make sure all users are logged out. And there's a number of other little tips and things, so check those things out. Again, the easiest way to get the information about whether it's time for you to upgrade to Windows XP Service Pack 3 is to go to datadoctors.com. You click under the free help section and look at the latest column that's there. It'll also be published this Monday in the East Valley Tribune, so you can find that there. We're going to take a quick time out here. We're going to get caught up with some news, some information, some more traffic and weather. When we come back, we got Joe, we got Jeff, we got room for you at 602-277-5827. It is the Computer Corner. Brandon Disney and Mario Caldiera here to help you out with your technology woes for the next half an hour or so. So stick around. Back to the Computer Corner. We're here to help you with your technology problems, your computer frustrations, and we're doing it 602-277-5827. That's the number you can dial, 277-KTAR. We're here for the next half an hour. We invite you to give us a call if you're having troubles with your computer systems that are acting up, you're thinking about buying something new and looking for some advice, whatever the case is, we're here for you. You can also join us online at datadoctors.com/radio. I think it's that time of the show where Pete hits a button, the music starts, and then it brings us to talk about something we call our Geek Speak of the Week. The Geek Speak means, basically, out there in the world, the geeks of the world try to talk down to you. They try to talk to you in all this techno babble to make you feel silly or sheepish, and we want to arm you with information so that you don't have to be talked down to. You can talk back to them and make sure that you know what they're saying. So, Mario, take it away. This Geek Speak of the Week.
So, is this an actual word? Is it jiggity? D-Y-J-G-T-I-Y. What does that mean?
I don't
mean?
Know how you'd pronounce that.
How do you pronounce that?
There's too many consonants and not enough vowels. Is there only one in there? I guess Y is sort of a vowel sometimes, right?
God. So, did you just get the internet yesterday?
Did you just get the internet yesterday? How is this a Geek Speak of the Week? Who came up with this?
Well, it is used in various text-based communication to suggest that you're clueless about technology.
Well, apparently,
it's basically, downspeak.
Am I clueless about technology then? Because I've never seen that. We gotta, you know what? We gotta beat Ken up for this one. Where's the value in this?
Yeah,
that's the Geek Speak of the Week. All right, let's move on to something that that may actually matter. Our Head Whack of the Week. This is where we talk about things that really frustrate people. We get people all the time calling us, emailing us, telling them, you know, this frustrates me or this makes me crazy. Oftentimes, they're not asking for advice on how to solve something. They just want to vent. And so this is our kind of chance to take all those things, vent, but then give you a way to do something about it. This week's Head Whack of the Week, I have too many IM clients. IM for Instant Messenger clients. If you're one of those people that you've got some friends that are on AOL Instant Messenger, some on MSN Instant Messenger, some on this, some on that, And there's probably, what, 15, 20 different kind of clients out there. I've seen people who have three or four on their machines. They're signed into all of them. People are bleeping up everywhere, and they're trying to snap this one over here and do that one. Just all these windows, all this software, all this junk.
Cyber juggling.
Yeah, cyber juggling. So there's a solution out there that we've put in this week's newsletter. What's that solution?
Digsby.
Digsby?
Yes, Digsby. D-I-G-S-B-Y. It's a new program out there that hosts all of your IM, your email, your social networking sites, brings it all together in one place for you.
Is it like a web-based thing, or is it software you install, or how does the whole thing work, or do you know?
It is web-based, but it does have, it's a software that you download and load on your computer, and it basically merges all of your clients into one buddy list, gives you options that you can rename them so you can recognize them. You know, for those people who've got three different email addresses, and you've got to remember which one it is, and
right.
You just give it one name.
Huh. Well,
it's kind of cool.
People who have dealt with sort of the multiple IM thing for a long time probably remember one of the first products to kind of deal with this and deal with it well. The name just slipped my mind. Why did that happen to me? There was a product out there that used to, called Trillion. That's what it was called. Called Trillion. It lets you deal with, if you were on multiple IM systems, instead of having five different pieces of software, you'd have one. It would let you talk on all those different systems. And since then, there have been others that have done the same. I actually personally use a website called Meebo.com, M-E-E-B-O, and it's all web-based. So the cool thing about it is, for example, I'm signed into Meebo right now here in the studio. Now, I didn't install any software, but I just signed into a website, and I'm automatically simultaneously connected then to the Yahoo Instant Messenger, the AOL one, the Google one, the MSN, plus our own, we have sort of an internal Data Doctors Instant Messenger service. Plus I'm on ICQ, and then Meebo has its own proprietary one as well. I'm on all those all at the same time in one thing, and it's all web-based, so my buddy list shows up here, and I can see who's on, and I can see which service they're on. I can chat with any of them. I can do all kinds of cool things. But the really, really cool part is I can close this down and go home, and I pick up right where I left off, even though it's all on a web page. And it's really kind of cool. So there's another idea out there. Of course, the one that Ken had suggested and thrown in there for the head whack of the week. Digsby, if you do a little bit of hunting in Google, you'll find at least a dozen others. There's another one out there that's pretty popular called Gush. I know, and I've tried a little bit. It's Flash-based. So there's all kinds of choices out there, things you can look at if you're trying to consolidate all of your various communication and social networking sort of methods into one little convenient, handy little home. What happened to our callers? Joe and Jeff, and there was a couple of guys with J's. They just gave up on us?
Away. They gave up on us.
Well, let's jump back then on topic for sort of this week's theme. We've been talking about some of the things you can do to help survive business technology and some of the things that happen out there in the world, the Business Technology Survival Guide. We've got links posted for you if you want to kind of keep up with us here. datadoctors.com/radio. You'll see this week's links. We've actually got a link to download a free Business Technology Survival Guide. It's basically steps you should take, and it's fairly lengthy. I think that thing's probably 35, 40 pages. Don't be intimidated by that. We start with sort of a brief summary, and it's organized by sections, so you can jump from one section to another depending on the things that interest you. So, for example, you might open it up and say, okay, here's the five different sections we're sort of addressing. One and two I've already got taken care of. Number three doesn't really apply to me, but these other two, these look interesting, and you can drill right into just those and kind of skip around. So that's out there. It's a resource available for you, and it's free. There's all kinds of other things, some signs of an impending computer meltdown before the crash actually happens. Sometimes there's things that are occurring, things that you can measure, things that you can notice that sort of give a good indicator that there's going to be a problem. And it doesn't take a tech guru or genius to figure this stuff out a lot of times. We've got some practical steps that you can take, things that you can look at, things that you can measure by yourself with your own two eyes and some tools already built into the operating system, or in some cases, no tools. That'll help you identify, yeah, I've got this problem coming. Let me head off the problem. Save myself a bunch of frustration. Some links to past articles, in-house versus outsourced IT. If you actually have a business and you're looking at, gosh, do I keep this in-house? Do I bring somebody on to manage this stuff? Or do I go out to the outside world? There's some things that help you evaluate that, help you figure out when it's the time to kind of make that switch. All kinds of other things. So if you want to go paperless, we've got information on that. Sort of telecommuting. That's remote access. People out in their homes and things being able to remote back into the business. We've got resources for that. Just all kinds of things out there. And again, a lot of these things apply to the many, many people in their homes. Many people have multiple PCs. They have basic or advanced home networks. So in some cases, people even have servers now in their home. You know, Windows released, or Microsoft released that Windows Home Server, which is bringing that whole new element into people's homes. So there's all kinds of things out there. A lot of this definitely applies to most every computer user. Some of it's very business specific, but you can kind of look through those things and check things off of your list, make sure you're in good shape. Shall we jump back on the phone, see if we can help people out? I think Jason came back to us. Jason, thanks for calling the Computer Corner. How can we help?
Hey, question for you. I'm a data nerd for a major financial institution, and we are moving to Office 2007, which I'm not happy about, that stupid ribbon thing.
The ribbon thing. Well, the ribbon can be turned off, you know.
Yeah, is there a way to turn on the old menu structure and instead of using that ribbon?
Okay, you're putting me on the spot here. I am 99% sure that, yes, you can. I don't have the exact steps in front of me, but I believe it involves you going into the tools and options.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, well, there's that section where in the old days you could make it look like WordPerfect if you wanted, where you could have a blue background with white text and you could do all these crazy things.
Right.
In there are the options, I believe, to be able to set things back to sort of that classic view.
Okay.
So certainly you can disable that ribbon. I've seen it done before. Off the top of my head, the exact steps aren't there, but Google will be your friend, I'm sure, if you want to figure out how to make Office 2007 look and feel more like Office of the past.
Right. Okay, great. Well, okay. Awesome. That's good to know.
Not a problem. Hey, the only other thing to keep in mind with the switch is not only the look and feel, but everything is saved in a new document type, even though Microsoft years ago vowed that they would not change the format. They've changed the format. So
yeah, like Excel's XLS at X now.
Yes, which means anybody in your business, then once this has occurred, they're fine. But if they send to other people outside the business, those people may or may not be able to open without file converters, and there can be some frustrations there. So
yeah, I was part of the test team, and actually we did a lot of testing, and you can do it. It just takes a long time to open because it's got to do its whole upgrade downgrade thing.
Yeah, and for people on the outside world, if I was to receive a document from you and I didn't have Office 2007, I would have to download a 46 megabyte conversion utility. It's free, but it's just a big download. So
wow,
think about those things. And there's also ways you can change the default save format so that people can save in the back versions as well. So
okay,
all
great
kinds of options out there for you.
All right, well, hey, I appreciate your help.
Not a problem. Thanks for the call, Jason.
Talk to you later.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
An actual business user with a business question. See, technology can be solved. In his case, he's sort of forced to have to roll out the latest version of Office. So he's trying to figure out how to cope with that. And there's ways to, you know, in many, many cases, ways to make things work the way you want them to, even if the world's trying to change around you. For example, in Windows Vista, there's some things you can do to make it look and feel a lot more like Windows XP. So for people out there that have already made their purchase and now aren't real thrilled with the operating system that they have, there's things you can do. I know Randall emailed in just a little bit ago saying, are there any conflicts with installing XP on Vista? What I assume he means is taking my machine, wiping it out, and reloading XP, because there is no quick and easy way to kind of downgrade, if you will, by uninstalling Vista and putting XP in place. You have to wipe things out, start over. But the question, are there conflicts? Really, there's a couple of things to consider. When you've got a new machine that came factory loaded with Windows Vista, you have to do some research before you just decide, I'm going to go backwards in time with this thing and put XP on. Because in many cases, they don't make driver software. There's other compatibility issues that come into play. Certainly, in many, many cases, in most cases, the manufacturers no longer will honor a warranty if you have changed the factory-installed operating system. So you want to take all those things into account. You might want to look at some options of things you can do to make Vista work more the way you're used to, which may help some of your situations. So check those things out. We got some lines open, 602-277-5827. We're going to take another time out here, get caught up again with traffic and weather. And for that, once again, it's Bruce Gary in the KTR Traffic Center. Bruce. Welcome to the final segment here on the Computer Corner. If you missed any part of the show, fear not, it's being recorded. And it'll be posted up later on for you in our audio archives. You can find all the resources, past shows going back to, I believe 19 and 91. All kinds of content information for you, past audio archives, good stuff. It's all online for you anytime, datadoctors.com/radio. You can check those things out. Let's see if we can kind of mop things up with as many folks as possible before we have to sign off here. And up next here on the Computer Corner, I believe, is Ray. Ray, thanks for calling the Computer Corner. How can we help?
Hey, I'm a small businessman. I need my first laptop. I've been dealing with some IT guys, and I'm recommending XP Pro as the operating system. I wanted to see if you guys could recommend a laptop and Vista or XP for QuickBooks 2008.
Well, if QuickBooks 2008 is the only thing you're using and there's nothing else happening in your business that would affect things, then...
No, it's sole proprietor. I'm just a small guy, and I don't need a lot. So, but I want something that's going to work, and I prefer a 10 key as far as a laptop. But
well, most any laptop, there's not going to be a 10 key built in. There's a way you can hit like a function key and go 10 key. I might suggest that if a 10 key is big for you because you're doing a lot of stuff with financials, you can buy little external 10-key devices that plug in through a USB port, and
okay.
it'll kind of hang off the side. It'll be more what's comfortable to you and feel and function more like a 10-key, because trying to use the little function key on your laptop, it takes and kind of converts a section of the keyboard, and it doesn't feel quite right, and I don't think most people who do 10-key by touch aren't going to be real happy with it. So that's number one. Number two, as far as the operating system goes, if you don't mind... sort of learning new things and learning a little bit different way to do things, then Windows Vista, I think, would work fine for you. If all you have are basic needs, then I would say, you know, might as well take the plunge and go that route. On the other hand, if you feel more comfortable with going something a little bit more tried true, that's probably what more of your peers are going to be using out there in the world, then you would probably want to consider the XP Pro route. Now, that being said, XP Pro is one of the operating systems from Microsoft that does qualify for what's called downgrade rights, meaning you can buy a license with the machine for Windows Vista Business, but have the manufacturer opt to load Windows XP Pro. Now, not every manufacturer out there will do that. Most of the big guys that you order from over the phone or on the internet don't have those options for you. You have to get with somebody that provides that as an option to you, but it gives you sort of the best of both worlds in that you buy and pay for the latest greatest, but utilize the back version, and it gives you the ability to at any time convert to the latest greatest when you want without incurring additional costs for the operating system.
Well, okay, great.
Okay, so yep, talk to whoever it is you're comfortable with about downgrade rights. If they don't know what that means to you, you can do a quick Google search for downgrade rights and the word Vista, and you'll find Microsoft's official kind of stance on things. Make sure, again, it applies only to the professional versions of the operating system, so meaning XP Pro, Windows Vista Business, those kinds of things.
Okay.
Okay?
Thank you, sir.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye. You think we have time to sneak one more in here? Pete's going to probably get mad at me. Let's just see if we can do a quick one here with Steve. Steve, welcome to the Computer Corner. We got to make it fast.
Okay. You still with me?
I am.
Okay, we have at the office, one at my shop, we have an operating system for downloading information on automobiles to repair them. It's called AllData.
Yes.
And on the main computer inside the office, that's where everything's loaded up. All the DVDs have been downloaded onto its main frame. And then we network in off a computer that's in the shop. One of the systems, one of the information for like Chrysler's, I cannot read it off of my... off the mainframe in the office, but I can read it off of the network computer in the garage. But I don't understand why we can't do that.
You know, it's going to be, I mean, when you get that specific with something that's being provided by a third party that you have problems with,
uh-huh,
you're kind of left with not many choices other than to call that third party or get some support from that third party. The other choice is if you got somebody out there that technologically is fairly inclined and knows a lot about this kind of stuff, they can probably figure those things out. But
uh-huh,
but over the phone, without seeing it, without knowing more about what it is you're trying to do and some of the specifics, that's not something that's really going to happen.
Yeah, I did call them. They said there's something wrong with my DVD because I put the disc back in to read off the disc and it won't read off the disc.
Yeah, your best bet's probably going to be to get somebody out there that can take a look at your specific situation,
right,
with the variables involved and figure out what's causing it and then take care of it. It might be replacing a part. It might be a configuration issue. It could be a lot of things.
Oh, okay. Well, I appreciate your time.
All right.
You're
welcome.
Thank you much.
Thanks for hanging on for us there, and thanks for the call, Steve.
Okay-doh.
Bye-bye. We've run out of time here. Again, if you missed any part of the show, all kinds of stuff for you online. datadoctors.com/radio. We'll be back next week, as always, here to take care of your troubles with technology and your computer consternations. So until then, remember, when it comes to your computers, your technology, and things in your life that plug in or take batteries, if you don't need it, don't install it. We'll see you next week.